It's time for another episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur.
Okay.
I've seen clients, they had to pay a lot of money. What did they do?
Ransomware, right?
Yeah, no, that not that. They let their domain expire.
And somebody bought it.
I don't know if someone bought it, but all I know is they had to pay a lot of money to GoDaddy to get the files back.
Yeah, because there's some that GoDaddy has where they'll say, oh, this website's a premium website, and it's 15 grand instead of, what, $150 or whatever it is.
That's what people do also.
Yeah.
So I have, first of all, around my own business, I have like 7 or 8 different URLs. And then if, the middle of the night, I'm sure you do have a notebook by your bed. You have a good business
you
name
think
or
of
a good
the, yeah.
idea.
Sometimes I don't remember what I wrote down. I'm like, where'd that come from?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Where'd that come from? But I'll write down and I'll actually buy different URLs.
Just
too.
To, for your business.
Yeah. Well, also
for
just
clients
and
just
business names.
To have names.
Yeah.
Because there, by the way, there is something in law about website squatting. So there were cases where, when the web was first getting started, where people would buy IBM.com.
Yeah. Oh, it happens.
And they sued, and IBM won because they own the name, and you can't just steal their website and hold them hostage.
That's crazy. I mean, I've worked, at agencies where we were working on the naming and we didn't buy the URL fast enough, or someone bought a variation. So if it was XYZ, they would be like XYZ Jersey City or XYZ this location. And it was actually stealing website traffic from the client.
Right. And sometimes if you're not IBM, it's not kind of a free for all.
Right.
And I also noticed that I think there's got to be a way they do this. If you go to like register.com or GoDaddy and you search a name, I had somebody doing this for a restaurant, and they would search some names, and they came back the next day, and the names were gone. Like, it's like somebody, there's some way, from a security standpoint, people can, watch what you're searching. I don't know if he had, a spam on his, malware on his computer or something, and literally these things would be gone in a day, and nobody was interested in them before. It was weird.
Oh, really? Maybe.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, someone has to be seeing what you're typing in.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hey guys, this is Lila Schneider here from Let's Be Media, and we help business owners monetize the digital landscape through creative marketing capabilities.
All right, so Lila, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on and coming out on a Friday afternoon, cold Friday afternoon. Right? I think it's supposed to get warmer tomorrow, though.
It's New Jersey in the wintertime, though, and thank you for having me, Mitch.
I appreciate it. Okay, so I want to talk about, all the digital marketing that you do. And I first met you, at a networking event, and then I came to hear you speak at another event, but both for that Sid and Eric's event, Switch Events, right?
Yes.
But before we do that, why don't you get into, where you grew up, where you're from, so you get a little flavor for where you came from and how you got interested in what you do now.
Absolutely. So I'm a New Jersey native, born and raised in Montville, New Jersey. I've been in the area for about 26 years, which is super exciting. especially, running into your ex-boyfriend at the gym.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, exactly. It's exhilarating. But I've always had a PR and marketing background. I went to school at Rider University, also in New Jersey. That's how much I love it. And studied PR and event planning.
Okay.
So when I was out of school, I actually went to a PR firm in Midtown Manhattan.
Okay.
Decided that it was pretty much like Devil Wears Prada, and I wanted to focus a bit more on the creative marketing side. So I ended up at a creative agency in Hudson County after that.
Okay. So when you were in PR, what kind of clients did they have?
Sure. So I was actually on
the famous ones. I mean, just the kind of ones.
No, for sure. I was in beauty PR, so
okay.
I worked on the Neutrogena team. So it was honestly really cool. We got a lot of different products. The events were really cool, but it kind of showed me personally that I could be working on really exciting content, but if the work environment wasn't a right fit for me, I was going to be super miserable.
Right. So it wasn't a great work environment.
Yeah, no.
Okay. But on the PR side, public relations, you're doing things to promote the brand, right? It's a little different than marketing. I think people don't understand. Maybe you can explain what's the dichotomy or the difference between marketing versus public relations.
Sure.
People think it's the same thing. It's not.
PR, you're always pitching the media and trying to get, you know, certain products on the TV or magazine. So if you, for example, using Neutrogena, if you see those makeup wipes in the magazine,
right,
it's actually paid for. It's just not called paid for advertising. It's just paid in different other ways because
okay.
of the retainer that they're paying the agency and whatnot.
Got it.
Marketing, on the other side of it, it's always paid.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good. So marketing is closer to advertising, and PR is like you're trying to get them press coverage.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. And they say it's organic, and in ways it is. Personally speaking, with the growth of technology and how social media is growing and growing, I personally feel as that the lines between PR and marketing are closer.
Yeah, they're blurring.
Exactly.
Right. Because I think with small business owners, like PR is because you can't afford marketing. You know, you have no money. So you start doing things to promote yourself on social media that's more PR related. And then maybe you get into more things as you grow that are paid, even if they're not too expensive, you know.
Exactly. And that's honestly a great point that you just made, Mitch, because there are discussion sites such as Quora where
okay.
you can go on and say, I'm Lila Schneider, I'm a digital marketer, and then you can actually answer questions.
A Quora like Q-U-O-R-A?
Correct.
Okay.
And
I don't know why I know how to spell that, but
that was awesome.
Just
yeah.
popped into my head. I must have seen it somewhere.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can answer questions, you know, in the industry, branding yourself as an industry leader, or you can talk about, you know, topics about relationships or anything, makeup, anything in the world is on there, and you can actually learn a lot from them, as well as, you like I said earlier, brand yourself as an expert in the industry.
So Quora is like a discussion forum, but it's all different areas. It's not just like
exactly
okay
education, school, personal. You could talk about narcissists, sociopaths, like
people. You're like, you want to talk about knitting, you can go find a group on Quora.
Yes.
That does it.
And why I love Quora is because you actually have people who have lived through these experiences or had a interaction or have knowledge, and then you learn from them. So it's really valuable information.
Okay, is it Quora.com? Is
Correct.
That the website?
Yeah,
oh,
I absolutely
good.
Love it. It's
we'll
awesome.
Put a link in the show notes so
yeah.
people can.
Yeah, you can answer things
get there.
About law.
Okay.
Yeah.
You could become an expert. There's things like, it's like groups on LinkedIn, right, where you're part of an affinity group, and then you're posting things, and they're like, oh, you're the expert, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So where were we? So you were talking, so you left the PR firm, and
yes.
it was not a good environment, and then you went to a marketing firm?
So yeah, I did. There was a little time in between where, to be super transparent, I was a bit miserable at the job just because of the quality of life there. I was commuting from New Jersey, so I took a data entry job for a very hot second, which, being a creative
okay.
person,
yeah.
I realized that I could be making a ton of money, but if I wasn't doing something creative and very brainless, I was also going to be miserable.
Yeah,
so
right, of course.
That lasted a
bit. But that was like a little jump over. It was like the bridge to the next step.
It needed to get me back to the other side of the Hudson, the better
okay.
side, I like to call it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I commuted with law school and everything, and then I started a job in the city for a very short period of time, and I'm like, I do not want to do this for the rest of my life, commuting into the city. And, you know, look, for some people it's great, and that's all they know and whatever, but I don't think there's too many commuters you're going to find from New Jersey who are like, I love it.
Yeah,
you know?
I would agree with that.
Right.
It's not for everyone, but to each its own.
It's draining, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me personally. But
okay.
I know some people who love it.
So you must have found, you found a job in Jersey.
Yes.
Where was that?
In Hudson County.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is it, what, Jersey City, like near the water or?
Secaucus.
Oh, sure.
So
yeah.
right on the border over there.
Right, right. That's where the pig farms used to be.
Oh,
I lived in Secaucus for a while.
Did you?
I lived in, what are the condos like on the water there? Harmon Meadow or Harmon's Cove or something like that? Yeah, I lived there after law school with two friends of mine, and it was a fun place to live, but every spring there were so many bugs. I was telling somebody yesterday at lunch, we were talking about something, and Harmon Meadow came up, and you literally had to get out of your car, close your mouth and your eyes, and run into your – it was so bad. And then they would spray, but if they didn't time it right, they would miss the whole hatch, and then they were all gnats. It was disgusting. It was really a crazy experience, but
– I can only imagine.
Hopefully they've solved that problem. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't been there in a while.
Yeah. I know there's a lot that's been built up since then.
It's changed drastically, even in the short amount of time that I've known the area and been familiar with it.
Yeah, this was probably 30 years ago. You know, it's early 90s. after law school. Okay. So tell me about that firm. So you started marketing. You started learning about marketing and doing marketing and writing copy and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. It was honestly one of the best experiences I've had as far as a work balance, work relationship goes. I love the actual work I was doing. I was working with the branding and creative development teams to be doing all of that for residential buildings in the tri-state area.
Okay.
So we were working with either the sales agents or the leasing teams, doing the logo design, the naming of the actual building, putting together the marketing collateral on the website. So working with the designers and trying to relay what the client wanted for that, and then working on the advertising concepts, and then also doing the actual content writing for all of that.
So these were apartment buildings, condominiums,
both?
Yeah, so they're either sales or rentals.
Correct.
Oh, okay, good. So you got your feet wet then in the real estate business.
Exactly, and I was managing, you know, the designers, the website developers, working also with the client. So it was a great experience for me, as well as putting together the actual proposals.
Okay, so how long was that?
A little shy of 3 years.
Okay, and how long ago? So you left them?
Yes.
And then you went out on your own, or there was an interim?
No, that's pretty much how it happened. So, you know, again, I left that agency not for the work, but for the people. It just wasn't the right fit for me personally. Nothing
right.
about the agency at all, just for Lila Schneider personally. It wasn't what I wanted to be doing. I had an opportunity. I tapped into some of the connections I had made. I did a lot of media buying at this job.
Okay.
And I had...
Media like radio, television.
Exactly. A lot of out-of-home, just because of the market that we were working with.
We
did a lot of out-of-home and digital
buying.
Makes sense. But we did do radio and TV as well. And I had reached out to some of my contacts, said, hey, you know, I want to go, you know, leave. Let me know if you know of anybody that has any open positions or whatnot.
Right.
And I was also interviewing at the time. So I had found some people that were interested, you know, let's have dinner. And instead of offering me a job, they offered me an opportunity and kind of saw it as, like I said, an opportunity that we could start something. And the idea was actually to focus more on PR and a little bit of marketing.
Okay.
And they were supposed to, what was the term that he used? He was going to drive the car and I was going to steer or something, meaning that I was going to not be doing any of the sales work, but doing all the legwork.
Okay, so you're like the inside person and
yes.
he was going to be the outside person.
Yeah, and there was two partners. And I actually turned down a job.
In addition to you?
Yes.
Okay.
So it was three of us,
which okay.
is always an odd number for, you know, whatever you want to think about that.
Depends on whose side you're on.
Exactly.
Right.
And I had actually turned down a job in the city with, at the time, I think it was 70 or 80K in like 5 weeks paid time off. So,
oh, that's nice.
but
then you'd be back to commuting, which you didn't want to do.
Exactly.
Right. So it's hard to pass up.
I figured at the time it was a good option for me to kind of, you know, take a risk, see what it's all about.
Yeah, but not completely on your own.
Exactly. I wasn't completely on my own at that time. I think I just would have mentally not been able to take that on. And then kind of, you know, that happened and that was not even a full year. And I realized I was doing so much more than, you know, quote, the legwork.
Right.
And they wanted me to now be doing new business development and
right.
so forth and so forth. So I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I'm like,
well, you do that for yourself. What do you need to do for them?
Exactly.
Right.
One thing led to another. They wanted to focus on their existing businesses. And I decided to take the clientele that we had from that business and open a new business entity for legality purposes. And that's when Let's Be Media became a business in March
2018. So it's about a year and a half.
Yeah, so it'll be 2 years in March.
Okay, so when you got started, you had a group of clients you were able to take with you. So you had some cash flow to get started.
Exactly, which was nice.
Okay, so what do you do like the first day you go in? And did you get an office or is it all virtual? You don't need
this
really
right
an office.
Right now it's virtual. The majority of my clients want me to come to them.
Right, so you're going to them. Okay,
yeah.
So do you remember what you did your first day when you're out? Like there's nobody there anymore. It's just you. I'm trying to think if I even remember when I did that. But
well, I'll be honest.
It was only a year and a half ago, so.
Yeah, it was a big mental struggle, I think, you know, at first, because as human beings, we have, you know, one thing in our mind and we can't always see around that or over that, if that
right.
makes any sense. So after I got through, you know, what I had to get through as a person, I reached out to them. I said, hey, you know, there's a slight change in the shift of gears. It's still going to be done the same exact way. You know, if you'd like to stay on or whatnot, would love to have you. all my clients did stay, of course, and I still have some of them.
And how does it work? Do they pay you a monthly fee and then you're just doing all kinds of stuff?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It depends what kind of work we're doing. If we're doing something such as managing their social media accounts or
right, that's ongoing.
Exactly, Mitch. So that's okay. Going to be a retainer-based structure.
Okay.
For things such as websites that or content writing.
That's project-based.
Exactly.
You come up with a fee for whatever. Okay, so let's talk about that. So tell me what specifically or what things are you doing for clients these days? I know that, but it's got to go. I want the podcasters to hear the listeners.
No, that's a great question. I appreciate you asking. So honestly, the majority of our work is website design development.
Okay.
Because every business, you need a website or you need a landing page for the ads that you want to do. So I would say lead generation and websites, because that's what everyone really wants.
Right. And a landing page is really like a specific page that ties to the ad, right? Because if the ad drives you to a website, I've had this happen before. You get to the website and you're like, you don't even know where to go from there. There's nothing that ties in, right?
The nail on the head.
Okay,
that's
good.
Exactly.
See, I did my homework before this.
You couldn't even have said, I couldn't have even said it better myself, seriously. Because if the landing page is not contextual with the ad that someone clicked on, just like you said, they're WTF.
They're just confused,
yes.
And then they just go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. They do something, yeah. So it's like they're walking across the room and they get a niche and then they go, where am I? And then they leave.
Right.
Yeah, so you lose people. So the web, so the landing page is designed to like do something, right? It's to capture their email or to give them information or whatever. Maybe like through, I was just listening the other day to a podcast about an attorney that does landing pages and he was using a funnel. Is that the right term? Like where you get a lot of people and then it gets down in the bottom?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like bringing them into the funnel, right?
Yeah, because there's different stages of marketing, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Which is...
Oh, first you have to have someone aware of your brand, consideration, are they ready to purchase, so forth, and then the afterlife cycle as well of nurturing those clients.
Right. And that makes sense because you meet people, they're all at different stages, right? So you can't just say, okay, you ready to buy and... 4 out of 5 or not, so you don't want to just dump them and not, right? You want to keep them in the system, so to speak?
Exactly, and that's what we do. We really help clients figure out what ad is going to what buyer persona. I call it a content roadmap. So we'll lay out SMART goals so we can evaluate if the money that we're using to invest is actually working, if we're getting our return on it. It lays out the different buyer personas as well as, again, what buyer stage they're at. Because the messaging also, you have to remember, is going to be very different from each buyer persona to the next. And you always want to be speaking to your target audience. Forget about everyone else that's seeing you. You want to speak directly to your
So the persona is almost like a client profile. So they might have 5 or 6 different types of clients they deal with.
Yeah, each business, it's very different. And that's also another big side of our business. We'll do the strategic messaging, positioning, and then help further develop those buyer personas or fully develop them if they don't have them. It's very important for any business, if you're going to be investing money digitally, to know what you're investing in.
Right, exactly. Oh, I think that's a big problem with people if they're trying to like do things on their own. They don't even think to measure things. They don't know how to measure things. So how do you, as a professional, how do you measure what's their return on what they're, you know, should they be investing here versus... You know, what's working, I guess, is the best way to say it, right? How do you go about measuring that?
Sure. So there are tons of ways to measure. There's a ton of analytics software out there.
Okay.
I have some analytics software where I can get as granular as see as the IP address of the users.
The person that's coming to the page or
Correct.
Whatever.
So, for instance, we use one software and we get the IP addresses. So even if someone doesn't fill out a form, I still have those IP addresses saved on a list so we can further retarget them down the line.
Oh, okay. So that's good. So if they're in Michigan and they happen to log on to the site and they're looking around, they don't do anything, they leave, you have some sort of a way to target them and say, hey, we saw you were here.
Technology's great. So once they're
sometimes
on the website,
it's not, right?
They're mine. For what I do, that's great.
Right.
If you're someone, you know, who doesn't want to be retargeted, but then there's also like ways that people can, you know, privacy and security and whatnot.
Yeah, on their side, right?
Exactly.
But a lot of people don't know that.
Right.
You know, I mean, I was listening to a podcast with who's the guy who ran away to Russia because he from the NSA? Edward Snowden. Right. He's the guy who they want to arrest him. And he went to Russia. He fled the country. He worked for like the National Security Administration. And he saw that the government could just go in, tie in your cell phone, tie in your website. And they know exactly where you are. And they track you and all this kind of stuff. And he, you know, obviously felt it was a little bit of intrusive from a privacy standpoint. But from a marketing standpoint, it sounds like you really can. I guess that's why, like, you go to a website like Amazon and things like that, and things pop up magically that you were looking at other, they just know,
retargeting.
Right? Yeah, they're retargeting. Like you were looking at pillows for, it's funny because I have clients who work in other industries, four clients. So they might be doing research on something. Next time they go to Amazon to buy something pops up, but it wasn't for them. But Amazon doesn't know that because they were the ones that were doing,
they're doing the search, right?
So, okay. So if I go to a website and that website, do I have to give permission for them to track my URL? No. Unless I have a privacy setting on my end. It's open game.
In Europe, it's a bit different, but here, no.
They have rules in Europe.
Yeah,
and here
I believe
we don't
it's called the GDPR, unless I'm switching up the acronyms or whatever. But
oh, okay. Oh, that's like something data privacy.
Exactly.
Something like that. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's very, it's very comforting.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, but that's interesting. So the average business owner, small business owner, without working with a professional like you who has the tools, they're not going to invest in these tools just for themselves because it's probably, you know, expensive and time-consuming. You have to learn this stuff, right?
Exactly. So the pain points for, you know, some of my buyers, it's usually tedious, time-consuming, or they're overwhelmed and they don't know where to start. And
right.
That's kind of what we do. We were founded on transparency, quality of life, and integrity. So when I put transparency on my website, Mitch, what do I mean by that? There's so much software available at our fingertips, and now we're able to, you know, set up a client on a marketing automation platform and say, hey, we can manage this for you instead of paying, you know, $50 for whatever email blast service that you're using. We can spend $50 here, or, you know, actually you want to use this one because it has text capability and it has drip campaigns. So then we
like
can,
automated things where you,
exactly
right.
And how people click on the email blast and so forth. And that's kind of why I love being my own boss and being in business for myself, because you don't have to necessarily charge someone a really high retainer to get them a really good return. Because like I said earlier, there's so much technology and we just have to be utilizing it.
And they can grow with you if they're small, right? So are there any platforms or sites like email's a good example, right? Are there any ones that you think are better for the small business owner than others? You're not endorsing any of them.
No. It really depends. Obviously, they all have pros and cons depending on what your objective is. Obviously, HubSpot is really good. It gives you like a little bit of everything, but then it also nickels and dimes you for the size of your email list versus if you want to.
So, if you're like a bigger organization, HubSpot may work for you. But if you're like a one person shop,
exactly,
make it a little crazy.
It's also scalable. And then there's Prospect.io, which is really great if you're a business that focuses highly on email blasts, drip campaigns, and wants to text people. Marketo is a bit more expensive, but it also has a lot more capabilities. So it really depends on the business, where they're at in the stage of their game, and if they, you know, have a CRM system, and which ones integrate with what.
Yeah, because they're looking. And so a drip campaign is kind of like almost like a sales funnel, right? Because you're moving people from one email to the other, and then
it's different paths. So let's say someone
depending on where you click on.
Correct.
Okay.
Exactly.
So it's not necessarily just a series of emails. They all kind of go different directions depending on what you do with it.
Exactly. So if we subscribe to something and you opened it and I didn't, the next email I got would be different than the next email that you would get.
Right. And if I just read them all the way through, I'd get one. But if I'd click something along the way, it would send me off on another path.
Yeah, you've definitely done your homework.
Yeah. No, I find all that very interesting. There's a website, I think, called ClickFunnels. And
they
automate all this stuff for people that don't know what they're doing.
There's a ton of stuff like that.
Yeah. That's one thing I want to get good at because, you know, we met through networking and marketing, and I do my emails, I do my podcasting and stuff. So I get out there and I do that stuff. I'm sure I'm not doing a very good job at it, but I really want to get to the point where I believe that there's business out there for lawyers on the internet. And a lot of my colleagues over the years have said, oh, come on, you know, it's local, you meet your, but as a business lawyer, there's, you know, business owners that need help all the time. They don't have to be from Oregon, they could be here, but I think that now more and more and more and more people are looking to the internet because it's just so accessible through their phone or whatever, when in the past you might have only searched for things that you were embarrassed about, like bankruptcy or divorce or criminal law, things like that. And now people are focusing. So I want to try, and I'm, you know, working with, I have a coach and I got you and I got other people and people that build things and stuff that I think I want to try and figure that algorithm out. Like I want to be not the best, but one of the attorneys that are kind of supplementing their activity on a systematic basis versus just, you know, look, I have coffee and lunch with somebody every day almost. and it keeps my name out there. And then they go on the mailing list and they find out about my stuff and we stay in touch. But that's not like a marketing campaign. That's networking.
Yeah, but it's nurturing.
You got to kind of do both, right? I mean, you got to.
Yeah, but as long as you're putting something valuable out there.
Gather people, I guess, right?
Yeah, but you are doing that also. Yeah,
I guess. I don't feel like I am. I feel like as a lawyer, you just sit there in your office waiting for the phone to ring and, you know.
I know a lot of lawyers and they don't even do as much as you do.
Right.
I mean, I think as humans and especially business owners, we can always be doing more and more.
Right. Yeah, probably right. You're right. You always.
But that's life.
But sometimes you get to the point where, okay, it's enough. I'm not even close to there. But I go to a lot of events and there's not a lot of lawyers. There's some. I don't know, maybe they all have business and I'm the only one that doesn't. I have no idea.
Right.
You know, you go and back and forth and you meet some people. So so now that you're on your own, you've been doing this a year, 2 years coming up in March, right? Are there some industries that you've worked with that you've found interesting and that you like better than others?
Absolutely.
To work for, I mean, not that you like them.
Obviously, I mean, beyond my experience in the real estate agency, excuse me, with my real estate background, on a personal level, my family loves real estate, so I just know so much about the real estate
industry.
Right,
it's a good industry.
Yeah. So I love, obviously, working with that industry, but I also work, you know, similar. So home goods stores, interior designers, trade professions. But then on the other side of it, you know, we just finished a website for a dog groomer. We work with nonprofits. I'll do a lot of content writing for financial advisors, huge compliance and whatnot.
Yeah, so you're learning that business because that's nuts.
Yeah, that's its own.
I have financial people that come on this podcast. They can't talk about what they do. They got to talk about some other business.
Mm.
You know, because there's so much compliance.
Exactly. The financial, it's really hard. They can barely even change a period on the website
without approval. It's true.
Well, hopefully they'll eventually change that because I think it does prevent the actual industry from marketing and it kind of prevents them in some ways. But since everyone's doing it, it's kind of, I guess,
I don't think they want to, or the compliance people don't want to. They want to control everything. But I think the ironic part of it is they're going to have no choice. I mean, in order to compete.
Exactly. You know. Eventually, I mean, because, yeah, especially speaking about financial world, you just have so many things happening there. I mean, if you look at Robinhood, people can invest on an application now.
Right.
And you have all these smaller financial businesses versus going to a Fortune 500 company like Charles Schwab or Merrill. You have smaller mom and pop places.
There's even this thing I saw, a friend of mine showed it to me. It's the Stash card. Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
So it's a debit card where you, instead of like getting, there's one called the Cash App where if you go and get coffee, you get a dollar off or whatever, right? This one is stock related. So if you pay your Verizon bill through the card, you get little tiny pieces of stock in Verizon. And over time, I guess, you know, it builds up and you're able to save money and build investments. Wow. Somehow they're doing that, right? I mean, they must have a broker dealer and it's all, you know, it's the same financial world if they're giving you, selling you stock.
It's the same stock market.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I'm making this stuff up. So it's interesting to see what they're all doing. Okay, so let's talk about like some things that like if someone's getting started and they are totally clueless and they haven't even met you yet, but we're going to have all your contact information on the show notes. Some advice for like business owners getting started, what the kind of things they should be wary of and that kind of stuff.
Sure. So, I mean, definitely.
I should have told you that ahead of time.
Oh,
I didn't.
No,
so.
No, you're good. I like put me on the spot.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. You definitely have to, obviously, not to beat a dead horse, you have to do your research. You have to know, like, what's out there and not necessarily to, you know, hurt you or whatever, but just to see, like, what the options are. Yeah, to see what other people are doing.
Right.
And what's working and what's not working.
Yeah.
As well, even if you start on something such as a website builder, like GoDaddy or Wix, having a website is super important because it's the first place that people are going to research you.
Right.
Kind of going back to what you were saying before about law and people, how they only went on the website to, you know, look for embarrassing things like bankruptcy. I think with the birth of technology that people are smart and that we want to do our own research now.
Right. Yeah. Especially since it's so easy.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be you had to get to a computer and you could do it. Now you just do it on your phone.
Right.
So it's very accessible.
Yeah. And like I said, you don't have to spend a lot of money. Obviously, there are pros and cons to using website builders. It's not necessarily something I recommend. I recommend it to someone who's working on a side hustle, who doesn't have a lot of money.
Makes sense.
Who just wants something to, you know, get her dog walking business up and then, you know,
Yeah, then you can go to a professional site or a real site later on.
Exactly. And then also for me personally, to set up a website builder for someone, if they're paying me my hourly rate, it almost makes sense for them to just go to the next level, which would be doing a theme of some sort.
Theme like with logos, branded colors, that type of thing? Or like a theme is like a template?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's more of a template. You know, we work primarily with WordPress for...
Yeah, that's like the standard in the industry,
for
right?
For 2019, it is the best for the average business owner. And then there's also Joomla and Drupal, which is good too. But everything else...
But probably most of them, more than a majority of the sites are WordPress, right?
Yeah, I forget the actual percentage.
Yeah, but it's definitely more than 50%, right?
Because it's an open source content management system, and then people can, you know, make slight modifications on it if they want to.
Yeah, plugins, right? So people build third-party plugins and then...
Yeah.
But I've read about that too. It's like sometimes the plugins don't work or they don't work with other plugins you have in. You got to like know what you're doing.
You have to know what you're doing, and what people don't realize is that, you know, 5 years ago, websites were completely different.
Right.
Now they're much more affordable. But then you also have the other side of it. You have a lot more cyber attacks, and you have to worry about security. So going back to what you said about the plugins, you always have to make sure that you're updating them. So we also manage that for our clients as well. We'll make sure that they're updated. If you have, you know, a core WordPress update that hasn't been updated in a while, it's a way that spam could get in. You could get hacked. On our servers, we actually offer hacker-free security. So if something happens, you're covered 100%, which is pretty cool.
Okay.
I've seen clients, they had to pay a lot of money. What did they do?
Ransomware, right?
Yeah, no, not that. They let their domain expire.
And somebody bought it.
I don't know if someone bought it, but all I know is they had to pay a lot of money to GoDaddy to get the files back.
Yeah, because there's some that GoDaddy has where they'll say, oh, this website's a premium website, and it's $15,000 instead of... but $150 or whatever it is.
That's what people do also.
Yeah.
So I have, first of all, around my own business, I have like 7 or 8 different URLs. And then if, you know, the middle of the night, I'm sure you do have a notebook by your bed. You have a good business.
You
name
think
or
of
a good
that.
Idea.
Yeah. Sometimes so I don't remember what I wrote down. I'm like, where'd that come from?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Where'd that come from? But I'll write down and I'll actually buy different URLs.
Just
too.
To, for your business.
Yeah. Well, no. And no, also
for
just
clients?
And just business names.
To have names.
Yeah.
Because there, by the way, there is something in law about website squatting. So there were cases where, when the web was first getting started, where people would buy like, you know, IBM.com.
Yeah. Oh, it happens.
And they sued, and IBM won because they own the name, and you can't just steal their website and hold them hostage.
Well,
you know?
That's crazy. I mean, I've worked, you know, at agencies where we were working on the naming and we didn't buy the URL fast enough, or someone bought a variation. So if it was XYZ, they would be like XYZ Jersey City or XYZ this location, and it was actually stealing website traffic from the client.
Right. And sometimes if you're not IBM, it's not kind of a free for all.
Right.
And I also noticed that I think there's got to be a way they do this. If you go to like register.com or GoDaddy and you search a name, I had somebody doing this for a restaurant, and they would search some names, and they came back the next day, and the names were gone. Like, it's like somebody, there's some way, from a security standpoint, people can, like, watch what you're searching. I don't know if he had, like, a spam on his, you know, malware on his computer or something, and literally these things would be gone in a day, and nobody was interested in them before. It was weird.
Oh, really? Maybe.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, someone has to be seeing what you're typing in to GoDaddy or whatever, you
know, right.
domain place that you're searching on. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and they would like steal them.
Yeah,
you know?
it's a dog eat world.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you invest a lot of money, you know, in a business naming your logo, but then people don't think about their URL, and what if it's not there?
Yeah, or you got to put hyphens, which I hate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, people do it. I've seen it, but I hear it's terrible. Not a good way to do things, right?
Yeah. You want to make sure that you have a keyword pertaining to your industry, so that Let's Be Media, I have media in there. It's short.
Right.
No
apostrophe, right?
Apostrophe.
Can't have apostrophe.
Yeah, you can't. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then all my...
And just the B. So it's LETSB Media.
Yeah, but I also own
the... We'll put that in the show notes, too.
Okay, yeah, and I own the variation with the E in it. People always ask me, why'd you leave the B out?
Oh, really?
I just want to be creative.
Yeah.
But then all my handles match around it, too. When I was first naming my business, I wish I saved the scrap paper.
Oh, the whole exercise you went through?
Yeah.
Well, you're a creative
so
person. Most people are just like, what do you think of this?
Yeah, and then I would have to like put it on a post-it, let it sit there, and I'd be like, no, it's just not there.
Yeah, it had to like, what's the word? It had to marinate
yes.
in your creative process. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, people don't spend a lot of time, I think, doing that, but they should.
That's fun.
Yeah. Like, I mean, look, fun. I came up with the podcast idea, The Accidental Entrepreneur. I was like, well, what's it going to be about? Small business. And then there's a movie, you're younger than me, called The Accidental Tourist years ago. And I think it was William Hurt was in it. But it popped up for some reason. I was doing something. I didn't watch the movie, but it popped up while I was doing something on Netflix or whatever. And I'm like, oh. And then one of my struggles with business owners is that I find it frustrating when I meet business owners, and you probably find it frustrating too, where they didn't take the time to get a little educated, to talk to professionals, to plan a little bit, and they just kind of fell into being an entrepreneur. You know, they didn't make a conscious decision of it. They lost their job or they thought of this great idea, and then they just stop at the after the creative process. So they have this great idea, but they don't take the time to like figure these things out. And just because it's a great idea doesn't mean it should be a business, right? Because it might not work on paper, or you don't have the expertise for it, or there's really no profit in it. This happens all the time. So they spend money and they they get their logo done, right, online, unfortunately, right? Because now you go to Fiverr, you can find all these people who do stuff for you.
Yeah.
And then they open their doors, nobody comes in. Or you walk in and go, hi, Mitch, you know, it's so funny you have this door because I just saw this the other day. And you're like, oh. Yeah. Like you just did some searches and took some time. And I have a lot of business owners that are struggling. And I say, well, let's start by looking at like your business plan, right? Which probably the financial side, the marketing side, the most important part of your business plan, especially when you're young. It's a new business, right? They don't have a plan. So there's nothing to look at. So you don't even know what they did wrong. And now what I'm doing is I'm negotiating them out of their lease. I'm helping them with, if they leased equipment or they have a copier or whatever has to get out of. Yeah. And you know, I don't know what they do from there. They have to lick their wounds and, you know, move on. But if they just took the time to create something in writing that, and I'm you and I both have it. We don't necessarily have a business plan, but we have plans and things we write down and goals, and we're working them all the time. That's a business plan. I think that they would be a lot more successful. That's where I came up with the accidental entrepreneur. It's like people become entrepreneurs by accident, and they shouldn't be.
I would even say that to me a little bit, it's slightly accidental.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I never wanted to do
sales.
Well,
you wanted to go kind of be on your own, right? You were kind of looking for yourself. You met those two people, and you kind of – well, because you worked with them, you kind of had like an epiphany, like, I can do this, right?
And that's why I think, you know, I wouldn't change anything about it, obviously. Like, I would and I wouldn't.
Yeah.
But everything that's happened has kind of led me to this seat with you right now.
Right, and if you like where you are, if you change anything along the way, you could be totally in a different place.
Exactly, and – you know, knock on wood, I've been very blessed. Everything's been really awesome. You know, looking back even to where the business was last year, it's completely worlds different.
So. Yeah, you think you've come a long way.
Absolutely. In just a year. So I'm super excited to see what December 2020 is going to be.
So what are your objectives for like 2020?
Sure. So I would love to bring someone on to help me, whether it's part-time or full-time, you know, so I can spend more time doing the new business development part and networking, because it's actually something that I thought I would never love, and I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are really afraid of like sales and business development until they do it, and they're like, this is not so bad. I like dealing with people.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's awesome, especially with like-minded people, and you just want to support them and any way that you possibly can, or connect them with someone else. I love connecting people. So if I can't necessarily help someone directly, I might know of someone that could use your services or benefit from your network.
Yeah, it's what all networking's about.
Exactly.
So then how do you, because you're an entrepreneur, right? So from your business standpoint, how do you measure when you can bring that person on?
Sure. So I actually, well, obviously money. Because
because
money isn't necessarily evil. You know, you always have to make sure that your employees are taken care of before yourself. And then I do quarterly planning with a business coach.
Oh, good.
So I have goals written out. So I can.
So you're measuring exactly, like where you are.
Right. And I think as humans and society, we are so wired to correlate success with a monetary value. But that's not always the case. Yes, of course, you need money.
Well, you want to pay your bills, right?
Yeah, because we live, especially living in New Jersey.
Right, that's for sure.
Say that again.
Yeah.
But, you know, so beyond money, it's also like, okay, well, how many clients do I have on website hosting versus last time? So measuring it that way. So website hosting is a reoccurring revenue stream. How many clients do I have on a paid campaign or a social media organic retainer? How many websites are we doing?
Right, right. Yeah, I do the same thing for business. I want to get business owners on a retainer, even if it's a small retainer. And then first of all, if they're on retainer, they're going to call you for everything, right? So anything with their website, you want to be in the middle of what's going on in their business from a marketing standpoint. You don't want to just do a project, you charge them a fee, and then you wonder if they're going to call you later. And there's all kinds of people screaming at them and yelling at them all the time.
Yeah, no, I mean, majority of the clients that we do the website work for, we do host their websites and do their maintenance. It's honestly more cost effective for them because then they're going to have to pay for the licensing for all the plugins and whatnot. But there are, you know, one or two people. And then I had that instance, the very big beginning, where the client didn't want to host with us, which is totally cool. You know, go where you want to go, where you're happy with or where you feel comfortable. But just know in the long term, you know, you could be setting yourself up for, you know, disaster or something that you might not necessarily have thought of, like losing your domain if we're not watching that or getting hacked.
Okay, so obviously you don't have servers in your house and stuff, so you have a relationship with a company that does the hosting for you,
yes.
Partner.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's for me right now, it's awesome. It works great. The support, we can put CDN on the website, which basically means it goes super fast wherever a user is logging on to the specific website.
Okay, so if, let's say, I don't know, everybody loves you, so they're never going to leave you. Your clients will be with you forever. But let's say a client says, you know, listen, I'm going to move over to this person. I have a relationship with them now. They're a big client of ours or whatever. I have to move it over. Is that difficult for them to move their site
no? Yeah, no, we'll totally help them.
You have to, like, migrate files over somewhere, or is it just pointing at something?
We can help them migrate their website over for wherever they want.
And because it's WordPress, they can. Because I think years ago I had a site, and it was through, I don't even know what I forget the name of it, but it was some sort of a template type of a system. It wasn't WordPress. And then when we moved, and I think he and the partner split up, so the company was kind of like, you know, out there, and we had to rebuild the whole site.
Yeah. So with us, I know there's certain agencies or people that if you try to leave them, they're going to get really upset and they're not going to give you the website files. That's
right.
Not the case. We'll give you whatever you want. It's your website.
Yeah.
I haven't had that happen yet, but sure.
No.
No problem. But then if you're talking about if they're building on a website builder, such as Shopify, GoDaddy, Wix, you can't take that website and move it off of another server.
You can't.
Exactly. And that's one of the cons to using website builders. Yes, they're
right.
More affordable, drag and drop, et cetera.
Right.
But then you can't take that. Then you're back to square one. And all that money that you invested into paying someone to either, you know, build it for you or whatnot, it's gone.
Right. Yeah, because there's probably professionals out there to help you with Wix, right?
Oh, yeah,
all kinds
are.
Of people.
Yeah.
So that goes back to your point about your recommendation. So if somebody's just getting started and they just want to do something inexpensively, they could go to Wix, but they should recognize that probably they're going to have to start over and rebuild it when they're going to a more professional site.
And that's what I always explain to them, again, being very transparent with them. I'll always recommend, even if we want to do a single page, you know, WordPress website, and then we can always build on that from there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you can do something simple. It doesn't have to be a 15-page site with all kinds of shopping carts and crazy stuff, right?
You start with a single page, and then
yeah.
You know, you have that, your investment, and then it would be more cost effective in the long run to just add the pages.
Just build it off of there.
1,000%.
Right. And I know there's ways to unpublish pages and to hide them and to this and that.
Exactly, yeah.
And just keep them in the directory.
Index,
yeah.
Exactly.
Look
at you're smart.
Yeah.
You got this.
all right. So you gave some advice. So are there other things that people should know about, like when it comes to like social media?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like how. Because we talked about this before we went on air, so to speak. This isn't live, but I'm a professional, right? So as a lawyer, so how often? I mean, I don't post that often. I mean, I respond to some things. I send out emails like every other week. I don't have more time than that. Sid and Eric, right? And their podcast will come out in probably the middle of January. I mean, they're like on steroids, literally.
On steroids.
Yeah, they're taking drugs. Yes. I mean, he posts so much. And it's funny because now I'm starting to show up on things like because they'll comment about me or whatever. And I'll be like, you know, Sid made a comment about you. And I never used to see that. But now that I'm involved with them and they do so much posting, what do you see like your customers doing? Like, are they, you're doing it for them or they're doing it? Or?
Yeah, I do the majority of my posting for my clients. Sid actually, you know, he slaps my wrist and he always yells at me that I have to post more, especially being a marketer.
Oh, he doesn't think you post enough?
No, I don't.
But Sid posts a lot.
But it's cool. I appreciate, you know, the constructive feedback. It's always appreciated. As far as, you know, managing pages for clients, yes, that's something we do for them. We can be as hands-on as hands-off. We can fully develop the content for them. They can supply us with the photos. We could take the photos, engage with people, network, and so forth. So it's very flexible, and it can be as a hands-on or as hands-off.
And do you find that more businesses are doing things? Well, they're kind of different, though, on LinkedIn versus Facebook. I guess it depends on who your ultimate consumer is or customer is, right?
Right. I would think for the more professional sectors, your time's going to be better spent on LinkedIn versus, you know, Instagram or Facebook. It's still really good to have brand awareness and do your videos.
Right.
But it's also going to be more beneficial for products.
Right, but if you sell to, like, new moms, you're probably going to be on Facebook and Instagram, right? You're not going to, obviously, on LinkedIn.
Exactly.
But if you're B2B,
it depends.
Probably more, right? It might be Facebook, too, yeah. I don't even know. You know, it's funny. Maybe you can teach me how to test this. But so I use the mail program, MailChimp,
okay.
Right? And the only reason I use MailChimp because they allowed you to put 2,000 names on it for free when I got started. I'm like, oh, that's better than paying.
Yeah.
So, and I don't think they even had automated emails in those days. Now they do. So when I set up the, like a podcast came out this morning, right? So they allow you to post directly to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Okay. And I have those accounts, but I never look at them. So I set them up. And then they don't do LinkedIn, I guess, because they're owned by another company or something. So I use Buffer or one of these, like Hootsuite or whatever, to post those. But I have no idea if it gets to the right people, does anything. We were talking about links. I do have links on there. And I know they get really pissed when you take people away from your site.
Well, yeah, they don't get pissed. I mean, LinkedIn.
Although I do have separate pop-ups, so it doesn't really take them away. It opens a new window. But they don't know that. So
yeah, there's different, you know, different things.
Yeah. So, I mean, is that, am I just like throwing stuff? It's like I'm throwing gum on the wall and it's just ridiculous, or?
I mean, you definitely need to engage with people and you need to, you know, for Instagram and LinkedIn, be switching up the hashtags that you're using.
Okay.
With that, going back to what you were saying about getting, you know, your wrist slapped. If you're putting a link in LinkedIn on the actual post, they're not going to like that. They want people to stay on their website.
Right. So, but for some reason in the comments, they don't penalize you for that.
For
right
now, that's okay.
Yeah, probably by next week, they'll be penalizing you for that.
Instagram, you know, they focus more on live stories and engaging and if people comment. So that's why Sid, sometimes I'll wake up with a text, just posted LinkedIn, you know, text me. Facebook, you can share articles. It's its own beast. Facebook and Instagram are changing, honestly, quite a lot. They've had a lot of changes to their algorithm recently.
Yeah.
So there's been more of a focus on LinkedIn. I think it's still also very important to post on Instagram and Facebook because when someone searches your business or keywords pertaining to your business,
right,
your social pages are going to come up with that. So even if you're not necessarily getting a direct ROI from, let's say, your Instagram feed, it's still helping with brand awareness.
Right.
And digital,
notoriety.
Exactly. And digital credibility, right, which is super important. If you have social pages and you haven't posted in a while, it's just going to look off.
Right. So therefore, if using this service actually posts for me, so I have new posts because they just pop in there.
Perfect.
Yeah.
There's so many different scheduling software out there.
Yeah.
So.
To make it easy, right?
Yeah.
You can automate all that stuff. Yeah. And do you use some of those tools or do you have more like professional tools? Because you're a professional.
You ask great questions.
Yeah. I'm curious about
so
this stuff.
For me,
it's got to be things that you know about no one else does, right?
I wouldn't say no one else, but it's just a different angle. So you said you use Buffer and Hootsuite.
Yeah.
Like that, which are great for sole proprietors or, you know, someone who just needs it for their own personal use or their own personal business. For me as an agency, I really love Hey Orca.
Hey Orca?
Yeah, and they're based out of Canada. Beyond their branding, they have great feedback, and their capabilities are phenomenal.
Are they mostly dealing with professionals like yourself, not end user?
Yes, that's where I meant to go with it. Thank you for bringing me back to there. So Hey Orca, it's not for an individual. It's made for agencies.
Got it.
Thank you.
Got it. That makes sense.
Yeah, and it's great because the calendar, it's all laid out. So I send a link to my client. They go in, approve it. They disapprove it. They leave a comment. It's made for agencies.
Yeah, I got it. So you can work with, you have your account, you work with multiple clients, things going on all the time.
Yeah, and I love it. I send them a link and it only shows them their calendar, not everything else I have in there.
Oh, so it's all scheduled out. So it's the same thing. So you once they approve it, whatever date it's scheduled for, at whatever time, it gets posted and you don't have to worry about it.
Right. Instagram, I still will manually publish.
Okay.
Because sometimes they don't like that either. Like I said, the algorithm is changing a bunch and they'll slap your wrist, but you can schedule stories and then you get a push notification. They actually do allow to do it automated. If you want, you would just actually have to hook it up to Buffer. But Hey Orca, you can also post to your personal LinkedIn and your LinkedIn company page. as well.
Oh, right, because a business owner might have his own page and this and that.
Yeah, so yeah. For personal branding, which is a lot of what we do too with just how marketing's going, it's really important for business owners or even, you know, the lead new business, the development guy, her, whomever, needs to be posting on their behalf and putting a face to the business name.
Right, and the employees or the people, let's say the salespeople, right, they should be sharing the posts and liking the posts and commenting on the posts, right? Because then it gets it within their circles. It's funny, when I first joined LinkedIn, probably, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, somebody's like, you got to be on this new platform. It's like Facebook for business owners. I go on, I didn't know what to do with it. So I think for like 10 years, I did nothing with it. I'm like, what is this stupid? And then we used to deal with a lot of doctors. I still deal with a fair amount of doctors. And one time I get a LinkedIn request from this doctor. So I accepted it, of course. And then I realized that now I'm tied into all of his whole circle. So then when I posted things, I would meet other doctors. So then I started realizing that, I do a search and I find the doctors that are second. And then I, you know, send them a LinkedIn request. And then they would link into me. Half of them don't even read it. Everybody's just accepting links back and forth. And then you're growing your circles, I guess, or centers of influence. It really kind of works. Now, you think I get penalized because the Instagram stuff gets published like automatically?
I would have to guess, maybe.
Maybe a little bit.
Because there's no book or there's no place to say like yes or no. There's obviously forums where people have discussions about, you know, things of that nature.
You know, that's one of the problems. I read stuff all the time, and there's this voice in my back of my head that's saying it's probably changing like as I'm reading it. So if you read an SEO guide or something like that and it's 2 months old, it could be wrong in terms of the stuff that's going on. So it's very hard to keep up with all this stuff,
which
you know, promotes your profession, I guess.
Yeah, you have to stay on
You can't
top
do
of
this
it.
Yourself. Okay, so what other – I made you sit here for like 45 minutes. So what other things you think like business owners should watch for in terms of the digital space, what they should be doing?
Sure. So I would say if someone who's just starting out.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have our research, obviously, there. Networking, you can do that digitally on LinkedIn and also go to some local events.
Right. Right. That's a good point. You don't, just because it's not in person does not mean it's not networking.
Right. And I've met some of the best assets for Let's Be Media by responding to something on LinkedIn.
So you made a connection through LinkedIn?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is, I know it's weird for, you know, boomers or people, you know, who are a lot older and whatnot, but.
No, they're not even on LinkedIn. Maybe weird for me, like Gen X. I'm like at the bottom of Gen X.
No, but you get it though.
Yeah, of course. I figured it out. It took me 10 years, but, you know, it's not just people you meet and then you link into them. Sometimes you link into them first.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I would also say read a lot. I've read so much more since I've started. There's so much business books you can learn from people's failures. And then that brings me to my last point.
Any books you like? Or websites or publications or something?
There's a lot of books I like.
Yeah.
I forget who wrote this one. The one I'm reading right now, it's Consistency and Currency or Currency and
So you know what you'll do? You'll email me a list of your books that you like and we'll put the links on the...
That one I just started, The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F by Mark Manson. And that's kind of more with personal self-development, not caring what other people think. Because that's a big part of entrepreneurship. You're always going to be having the naysayers, people saying that you can't do it or why'd you do this? You're stupid.
They don't want you to be successful. Leave them behind. They want to pull you down. So you stay with them.
Yeah.
You know?
So I think focusing on yourself is a really big part of going into business for yourself too.
Like personal development.
Right. Because how are you going to pour water in the glass if you don't have the glass?
Good point. I just interviewed Danny Wood, Sandler Sales, if you've heard of Sandler. They're like one of the sales systems around training. And he's been doing it for 20 years, a great sales trainer. But he told me about a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. Have you heard of it? Susan Jeffers wrote it. I think she passed away, but she's probably written 17 books, but that was her first book. So Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway.
Okay, and that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a good,
book.
I'm
going to check into that one.
Yeah, and Sandler's a good book too. He wrote one something like you can't teach a kid to ride a bike in a seminar. Like you can't, you got to be out. In order to, like a lot of things you learn and you read about, even when it comes to your business, you got to do it.
That's what my first year, when I went out in the finger quote real world, that's what it was. It was like training wheels for business,
yeah,
to say
you
the least.
You got
to
do it. It's not what people tell you it is, you know?
It's not. And it's honestly, it's so much harder than people could imagine, but it's also so much more rewarding.
Yeah. And people are, imagine. And I think nowadays, like, I mean, look, nobody wants to cold call businesses, right? It's a terrible way to build your business. It gives you anxiety. People don't treat you well. They're suspicious of everything you do. They're suspicious of salespeople in general to begin with. But when you go to networking events and everybody wants to network, right? So it's very easy. They want to talk. They want to talk about themselves, sometimes too much. I try not to talk about myself. I want to hear, you know, what people are doing. And I think it just seems like it's a lot more daunting than it is, right?
Yeah, you just have to get yourself out there. For me personally, I was never the biggest fan of public speaking. I had to take advanced public speaking in college. So then this year I told myself I'm going to speak more. And you actually came to the event I spoke at.
Yeah, that's where I met you.
Yeah.
Well, I met you where they announced that you were speaking. I'm like, oh, she's the big guest, you know? And then I went, as a matter of fact, so I don't usually go to like 7:30 events in the morning. And this was up in Fairfield, right? So it was, I had to leave at like 6:45. So not only did I say I would come and listen to you, but I told Sid I would come. And I probably met better people that morning than I had met in a year and a half at events.
That's awesome.
I mean, I meet good people, but that morning I met a lot of people that I've now stayed in touch with and grown networks with.
Yeah. He has great events, and I appreciate your support, so thank you for coming out.
Yeah, did you make a lot of contacts there?
Yeah, that was a great event for me, and the funniest thing is I didn't even talk about anything about my business.
No.
All I spoke about was, you know.
And they all want to talk to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Mine's the same way. I think what happened was Sid, during that meeting, had mentioned that I do the podcast, and I don't even think, I don't know if, I guess I did say what I did, you know, that I'm a business lawyer. They were like, oh, I want to, you know, like everybody came up to you, want to meet you and this and that. I don't know. People get, when you're a speaker, they're like a famous person. They're like,
right. And if you present yourself.
Gives you a lot of credibility.
Exactly. And so that's why I think public speaking, I force myself.
Yeah. So you're doing other, have you had other speaking engagements?
I'm part of a BNI group. So
okay.
That is weekly.
Right. That's a good start, by the way. I did that too when I was first getting started networking. And it gets you out there and it gets you up and you're in front of people and you got to make your presentation. Yeah. How many people are in your group?
So we're at around 50.
Oh, that's
a
good group.
And I'm also the VP of my group, and I'm really proud of it.
Yeah.
My group. I know everyone in the network.
Yeah, I was the treasurer, I was the president, I was all this stuff.
Yeah, they have, you know, their commentary about BNI, but for someone starting out and also depending, you know, what industry you're in, it could be a very lucrative
group. It's very good for, like, trades because they're always working with each other and
the
realtors and, that kind of stuff.
Group.
I got, you know, wills and trusts, and I was the estate planning guy. And
right.
But, you know, after a while, 2 or 3 years later, it was time to move on to other things. But the group's still around, but none of us original 50 are there anymore.
Wow.
We have moved on to other things. You grow out of the out of the thing.
And beyond a monetary standpoint, it's also good for, like I was saying, public speaking. So since we're at 50, we only have 30 seconds to deliver our commercials. So
yeah, it really gets you down there. Yeah,
exactly.
Because, you know, that happens a lot, I think, when it comes to not just networking, but personal observation. You're somewhere. Somebody's grabbing a drink, they're waiting for something, and you get to the point where you're used of talking to people, and but you know you only have a limited time. It's funny, when you're at another event, not BNI, you know who are the BNIers as soon as it comes around, because they say, you know, Mitch Beinhacker, you know, Keller Williams Realty,
and
at the end they repeat it again because they've been trained to do that.
1,000%.
It's pretty funny.
It's good, though.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so if somebody wants to even just interact with you, ask you questions, meet you, you know, sit down, have a cup of coffee, learn about your business, maybe bring you in to do a presentation. What's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Oh, gosh.
And you don't have to say it. We'll put it in the show notes, but is email better? Or?
Oh, my God. You can contact me anyway. Obviously, email is great, because if I'm not, you know, on the phone right away, you can call me. You can message me on LinkedIn. I've been better about that, because Sid told me I also have to be better about
getting answering. Back to it. You got to have it turned on your phone so it pops up on your, or else you'll never go in and see it. So Let's Be Media is on LinkedIn, Facebook,
Instagram. I have my own business Instagram. People can reach out to my personal account, email.
And Let's Be Media has a website too, right?
Exactly, a contact form.
They can see all the stuff that you're doing.
I think at least 8.
And you're available for speaking on any of this digital topics.
I'm happy to speak about anything, you know, digital marketing related, or even how to brand yourself through networking, because I'm very passionate about networking, helping people, and, you know, giving people like little tips.
Yeah.
Like we did at the last.
It's important, because I've met people at networking events. They're like, I don't like, well, what do you do? And it never occurred to me like that's even a question. Like, what do you mean? What do you do? Just meet people and talk and get their cards and follow up with them. But it is a technique. I mean, it's a certain, there's a guy I know, my first podcast that I did, it was two parts. That's probably on the mic too, my stomach, because I didn't eat much for lunch today. I might have to cut that out. But so he's a, he does professional networking now. So he runs this website Network All the Time, and he coaches like business executives about networking. I was like, well, what do you teach them? But apparently, just like public speaking or just like getting out there and doing business development, networking is something that people are a little, they're more anxious about the eulogy than they are being in the coffin, you know?
Just so, got to do it.
Yeah, just got to get out there. All right. So I thank you for coming by on a Friday afternoon.
Thank you
talking
for
to me this
me.
Whole
this
time.
This is awesome.
We'll put all the info in the show notes. Be sure and send me the list of all the books that you like, so we'll put it out there. And then we'll get it out to all of our – you'll help me get it out to all the social media channels.
Yes.
Probably come out – I'm thinking probably late January because Sid and Eric are ahead of you.
Okay.
So
cool.
Well, unless you can work a deal with them, I'll put you out first.
All right. Yeah, for sure.
All right. Thanks, Lila.
Thanks, Mitch.
If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at beinlaw33@gmail.com. That's beinlaw33@gmail.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur has been written, directed, and produced by Mitchell Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.